I want to tell you about a new podcast called Amuse News. Publishing multiple days a week, Amuse News is your source for food news, interviews from around the food world, and more. On the show, we'll be engaging with food storytellers, from chefs to advocates to people working in the field, and many more. Find Amuse News wherever you get your podcasts. Amuse News is a destination for everyone who's looking for a new, insightful look into the world of food.
My name is Brandon Hoy, co-owner of Roberta's, a super duper awesome place. Roberta's is a very, 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 very proud sponsor of the Heritage Radio Network. We're also super awesome. Thank you, Heritage.
Broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn, you're listening to HeritageRadioNetwork.org.
Hello, Mr. and Mrs. America, from border to border, coast to coast, and all the ships at sea. Streaming live from the County of Kings, Brooklyn, New York City, on the Heritage Radio Network. Are you ready for the fastest half hour on the internet today? It's the Mike and Judy Show, spanning the globe for high-minded hijinks and lowbrow kicks to bring you the best in sex, drugs, rock and roll, and nuclear fission. They're too bad for radio and too good-looking for television. And now, here they are, to pluck the low-hanging fruit of the literati, your hosts, Mike Edison and Judy McGuire.
Now I always feel a little bad when we call our guest the low-hanging fruit of literati, because she is an amazing writer.
One of my very, very, very favorite people. I'm so happy.
I'm a high fruit.
You are like the top berry.
All right, just don't be strange, fruit.
Oh, please.
All right, well, it's the Mike and Judy Show here in Bushwick at Roberta's and the Heritage Radio Network with our very special guest, Lisa Carver.
Yay, we got Lisa Carver. We're cool.
Thank you. For those of you squares out there who aren't in the know, Lisa is probably most well-known for her incredible fanzine Roller Derby. She's a great author of Drugs Are Nice and the Lisa Diaries, her stuff on Nerve.com, and most recently Vice. I love the interviews with the kids. It's amazing. She's a performance artist, also known occasionally as Lisa Suckdog, and I'm proud to call you my friend more than anything. I'm so proud to have you here. And, of course, you have a new book coming out, Reaching Out With No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono. What's up, Lisa? And what brings you to New York? You came here to do some performance and paintings.
Yes, I'm not going to do any paintings. You are.
You're going to boss people around?
Yeah, they're forced paintings.
So do you tell them what to paint or that they have to?
Are you coming tonight?
I can't. But
you can't come?
I can't come. Oh. But you're wearing a really cute dress. Like, you don't look bossy and mean enough to make people paint.
Yeah, I wear yellow because I'm coming to New York.
Oh, I see. Because summer smells like pee.
What exactly is a forced painting? What's going to happen if I were to show up tonight?
We just partner people up, and then they have to tell each other. Well, it changes every time, but before we've made them tell each other their worst fear, and then they have to look into each other's eyes and slap each other's faces until they're red, and then they paint each other's souls.
I'm definitely not coming.
Sounds like something you and I need to do together.
Yeah,
Judy.
There's no encounter sessions at the Mike and Judy Show. We keep our feelings muffled.
Mike and Judy cheaper than therapy. It's what I always say.
Yeah, that's not what's going to happen in New York tonight, though.
I know you came with a message of like love and kindness. What's up with that?
Yeah, because it's New York. So yeah, I'm going to force people to like touch each other and then paint each other's hearts and gaze.
Now, the last time I think I saw you perform, which is pretty typical, there's been food being thrown around. There's been nudity. There's been peeing. There's been, a lot less than kindness and nicety at your performances.
Yeah.
So what's happened? What's turned you to the nice side?
Yeah, suck dog.
I'm not on the nice side. Okay. I'm not on the nice side. It's just to screw with you tonight.
I like that.
I'm a bad woman.
So you kind of live in the country, right?
Yeah, I live in New Hampshire.
What is it like for a weirdo to be in the country? And I mean that in the nicest way.
Nobody talks to anybody there, so nobody knows.
Nobody knows. So yeah. People at the grocery store, or even if you just introduce yourself, people don't know who you are?
People actually, once in a while, ask for an autograph or something like that, and I tell them it's not me because I, you know, like maybe I have like sweatpants on or something. So I'm keeping the mystique.
It's my schlumpy twin instead of my evil twin.
I don't know who this Lisa Suck Dog is.
Well, New Hampshire, home of three of my favorite people, three of my good friends, Lisa, of course, and my friend John Spencer, and our mutual friend Gigi Allen,
and the Shags,
So all sorts of savage talent coming out of New Hampshire. So, you know, before we were talking about dating, I think you famously once went out on a date with Gigi Allen.
Yes, I did.
And how charming. Gigi could be quite the charmer, let me tell you.
Was he charming?
It was memorable.
So is herpes. Like, what was the date like? Did he take you to a nice place for dinner?
The opera?
No, I met him at the show where he was performing that night, and basically he was surrounded by a bunch of fans, and I had to beat them all off and stalk him all night. And eventually he got really drunk and he cut my dress and stuck his tongue in, and he had like almost no teeth. It was very exciting.
Did he smell a little of poo?
No, not yet. Okay, it was early in the night.
Yeah. Hey, you know, Gigi was a very charming guy. He used to stay at my house all the time when he was in New York, and never had any problems. Sort of a mutual respect thing we had going. We, you know, made a couple records together, and you know, Gigi was all right.
I mean, he was fine normally, but someone came over with a video camera.
That's the problem. Yeah. That was always the problem, is that his fans would push him a little bit over the edge. Yeah.
Then he bashed my head against a beam.
Yeah, that's a bad date. We were talking about dating earlier. That would be a bad date.
It was pretty memorable. I was like 20 years old, so I haven't forgotten yet.
So like 5 years later, you still remember.
I love you.
So what is dating like in Big Sky Country? Because in New York, it's a nightmare because... Like, even the schlubbiest guy thinks he's supermodel worthy. Nobody, like, men from 40 to 51, like, 22-year-olds.
Okay, I'm going to have to step up and defend the single man of a certain age at some point. But let's start with...
Let's start with country dating.
Yeah, let's start with you, who certainly have to be the belle of Dover, New Hampshire.
Yeah.
I must admit, I am the belle of Dover. I went on a date one time with a guy. He took me to Dunkin' Donuts. And he was eating a blueberry muffin, and he, like Gigi, was missing a tooth in front, and some of the blueberry muffin came flying out of the hole and landed in my little
sporty
napkin.
Date.
Yeah, and then he took me to the movies to see I don't even remember what, but he talked over it the whole time, and then he was complaining about how his last girlfriend wouldn't have sex with him anymore, really loud.
So, and he has that perfect little hole for the you know, the holder. For like a clit, like, you know.
Oh, my God.
You really see the positives.
Slash half of McGuire.
And the whole time I'm thinking, you know, like the American tragedy of the blueberry muffin, because, you know, there just aren't enough blueberries in them the whole time. And she's thinking about,
about, like, she wouldn't have sex with him. You know, there could be, I don't know.
I was thinking about the muffin. The blueberry muffin.
But okay, so what about... Okay, I read about some of your dates on Facebook, because we're Facebook fans, friends, even though we've never met. The postmaster. Did you ever go out with him?
If I see him, I will hunt him down again. But I only see him, like, once every 10 years, and...
Don't you need stamps?
Yeah, he's not... He's powerful.
This is the real postmaster.
They keep him in the back. You
this,
know?
Is the, this is the like, New Hampshire postmaster?
Yeah, he doesn't have to mess with the masses. He's special.
Well, he's not delivering the mail. I don't know. Maybe in New Hampshire he is.
But maybe I can send you a package with like the address kind of screwed up, and then you can come in and be like really mad. And
so I
like,
demand right. to see the postmaster.
Yeah. You got to think about
it. Wear that yellow dress when you go see him.
Yeah. It's boxy, New York.
So where are you meeting these men? I mean, I live in a... you know, cosmopolitan metropolis, megalopolis here, and I find it hard to meet women. And you live way out in the sticks, and, you know, and you're really doing some serial dating lately.
I've told about three of my dates now, and you guys haven't told me any. I want to hear about yours.
Okay, I went out with a guy who crapped himself in my bed once. That's probably the worst date of all time.
Wait. So, set up the scene.
Bring the camera back.
That's like the best worst date ever.
But wait, were you asleep when it happened?
No, we were about to have sex, and he was... Jack is dying.
So you guys have Gigi Allen in common, that's nice.
But no, so I was in the other room, like, freshening up, putting on, like, a cute slip and stuff. And I go into the bedroom, and he's laying there with, like, his legs hanging off the bed and just, like, a pile of shit coming out from his boxers, like, liquid all over. And he wouldn't wake up. Like, I was kicking him and screaming, and he was passed out cold. And so I went to the... I was so upset. I went to the living room, which is, like, I have a railroad, so you can see the, you can see and smell it all night long. And then... I went to sleep and I wake up to him going, and I swear to God, this is true. Oh shit. And he like, and I just pretended to be asleep because I didn't even know what to say. Like, you crapped your pants. Like, this is so disgusting. So he went and he left. He did not clean up or anything.
Well, you can't clean that up. Like, you need a new mattress. Did you?
I have a new mattress.
But did he, did you make him pay for it?
No, no. I just was like, I couldn't even.
How did you get the mattress downstairs?
Well, it was, I took the sheets and the pad off, the mattress pad off, so then threw them out, obviously, not going in the laundry. And then, you know, bleached the mattress a little bit. Then as soon as I could, I got a new mattress. I flipped it, but there wasn't too much on the mattress, but it's a psychic stain.
I am so out of my league with you, too.
My flying blueberry is cowering now.
You know, all I was going to say, I was going to go, oh, yeah, you know, fear of intimacy, fear of commitment, you know, talking about the ex-boyfriend too much, hangover from previous relationship, and you got people crapping the bed.
I'm with you, Mike.
Oh, man.
Well, if you're going to write a book called How Not to Date, like, you have to have really screwed up.
Well, rule number one, avoid the incontinent.
Yeah. Yeah. And it was kind of like karmic for me because he had been in a relationship and we've been like sort of fooling around. So I guess like Catholic girl, like maybe that was God punishing me for you know, fooling around but never having sex with this guy. So then when it was going to happen. So, Lisa, what was your worst date?
I don't know. I can't. I out to you.
Where do you go on a date in Dover, New Hampshire? Actually, it sounds really charming. I mean,
you know, you go to the beach, you go to the movies, you go to Dunkin' Donuts.
You can go eat oysters, right?
Go hang out with the schizophrenics at Store 24. No, you can, you know, we have opera and everything. I mean, we have it all. It was, really? that was good. That was
maybe
nice.
Maybe I should move to Dover.
How many single people are there, though? Like, I imagine the pickings are kind of slim.
They're not slim enough.
How do you find an oil man in New Hampshire? Like, there's no oil up there, is there?
Well, he's all energies, you know, whatever, and he flies around places. Oh. I don't know. Yeah.
He's yesterday's news anyway.
But the oil man. So J.R. Ewing is what I'm picturing in my head. What does he know about Lisa Suckdog, and how does he parse
everything?
This? Yeah,
he knew everything. He was really into it. It's like one of those, like, when you get rich enough, you don't care anymore, and then you like you need more and more and more to, you know, shock you.
Do you ever find this was the thing that bothered me when I had like a big mohawk and stuff? I would be the novelty date sometimes.
Yeah.
Do you ever get that? Like,
I don't. Think so. I think
story of my fucking life.
You're the novelty date.
Oh, you know, I'm just that guy.
Oh. I hear weird noises on the headphones.
So, Mike, what I was going to ask you earlier, but before the mics came on, before the microphones came on, we were talking, Mike and I were talking about how much we love to read our own books.
Oh, yeah, the author narcissism, absolutely.
Yeah, although I don't agree with narcissism. I think it's just, you know, if a book is really good, it's good. It's what are you going to say?
Hey, you know, sometimes, you know, when I was really in the rock and roll business, like I said, I'd dream up and then conceive and make these records because it was what I wanted to hear and no one else was doing it.
Yeah.
I just had to self-actualize it.
Yeah, I love my books.
I love my books, too.
Yeah.
You know, it's weird. It's got to put a little distance between, like, the readings. It's like, you know, I don't wallow in it all the time.
Yeah.
But every once in a while, I pick it up. It's like, holy shit, I'm fucking smart.
Yeah.
And funny.
Do you laugh at your own jokes?
Oh, totally.
Oh, me too.
I can't wait. I would take myself to the Dunkin' Donuts and the opera if I could.
Well, what I wanted to ask was, have you ever masturbated to your own dirty scenes?
No, you know, and no, well, but you know, I used to write porn novels, right?
Yeah,
back in the day. So I wrote many porn novels, and no, did I actually bring it to fruition as such? No, but there were definitely times when, and I was young.
When you get like half a husky?
Yeah, half a husky. Yeah, yeah, I get turned on by some scene because I was, you know, pulling from something that was obviously, I figured if it's a turn on for me, it's going to be a turn on for the reader.
Uh-huh.
It should be.
Yeah.
So I'm definitely digging into, you know, reality and, you know, my self-actualized fantasy. Mm-hmm. So I definitely arouse myself, you know, writing what, you know, is my own personal you know, turn on, sure. But like I said,
but never know any sticky fingers. Like,
oh man, it's like I don't even know you.
What? You, I wrote Suburban usually... Tip Fantasy. It's the afternoon. We're taping this, so I'm usually here in the morning when I'm tired.
Well, have you, Lisa, ever masturbated to your own work?
No, I haven't.
Have you ever masturbated with your own work?
I have, like, in preparation for, yes.
It does get you in the writing mood.
Well, yeah, you know, you can tap that, you know, dark, you know, gross, debasing, disgusting, humiliating.
No satin sheets violent. And rose petals for you, Missy.
Bed shitting.
This might be a good time to take a break.
What are we going to hear, Lisa?
I think it's a song about dating or marriage.
Oh, I'm going to be married.
All right, it's Lisa Sutdog. It's the Mike and Judy Show here at Heritage Radio at Bushwick's. In Bushwick, at Roberto's. Here we go.
I'm going to be married, just like Custer. I'm going to be married very soon. I'm going to be married forever and ever. I'm going to be married, and everything will be so happy. And everything will be so nice at night. Oh, 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 oh. Oh, 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 oh.
I love it.
How come we've never made a record together?
I always invite you. And then you just like, I don't know, you're like driving up to New Hampshire and then something happens along the
well,
way.
Well, we got to do it. We owe it to ourselves. And weren't we going to make like a horror movie in your backyard?
Yes.
Okay.
You got to actually get there. Oh, you pick up hitchhikers. I don't know what happens to you.
All right. This is going to be the year. We're going to make a horror movie, do the soundtrack. What was that mess we were listening to anyway? How did you make that record?
That was a... Cause the Shroom did some backing tape music, and I just sang over it on a four-track. Remember those days?
Yeah. Yeah, how I long for them. So let's talk about your new book.
Okay.
Reaching Out With No Hands, Reconsidering Yoko Ono. And if ever there was someone who needed to be reconsidered, it's Jerry Garcia or Yoko Ono.
Jerry Garcia,
your book, I love your book. You know I love your book. And everyone who's read it is just falling all over themselves for it. It's very personal. It's very unexpected. It's not a biography. It's not a monograph. It's something really outside the ordinary.
What is it? What do you call it?
I don't know.
What's its genre?
What's the genre? I think it's like it's not even an extended thought piece. It's like 400 thought pieces. You know, in one. It's like one of those time release capsules. You know, like lots of little bubbles in it. You know, like you open it up and little pills come out of the pill. That's what it's like.
Yeah, that's what she's like. I think she's just.
The super drug.
Yeah.
How did you research her? I haven't read the book yet. When is it coming out?
It'll be out in October on Backbeat Books. And I can't wait. It's such a cool book. So, but tell me, what is it about Yoko Ono? Because obviously, you're so affected by her. And so, I mean, you got so far in her head. I mean, it's remarkable. In places I never would have thought to go.
She's really... perplexing. I still don't know her. I lived and breathed her for a year, and I still don't know what it is about her exactly, but she just makes everybody angry and hopeful at the same time, and then they get angry that they're hopeful and hopeful because they're angry. But she's a really great artist, but she's a totally conceptual artist, and she's the only one I could think of who never brought it down to a mass production level. So it's like she just stays in this not this and not that state forever, and it's so like underneath your skin like an alien. And
I mean, do we think her work is really good?
I
mean,
yes,
I do. I think some of her work is really great. I think a lot of it's dated pretty quickly, but then some of it just remains fresh because it's just it is. I mean, there's nothing wrong with a sign that says yes. How does that ever go out of fashion?
I totally disagree that any of it is dated at all. Compare her work to other artists in the 60s and 70s.
Well, sure. They can be dated too, but I think some of the happenings, I like the concept of putting the nail into the piece of wood, but it seems a little tired at this point, to be honest with you.
But so much of it is she didn't do anything. She waited for you. She told you to do something, and then it's how you do it. That's what it becomes. So it's always a becoming, so it can't be dated. You're so wrong.
Well, and she recycles herself a lot. As you know, I was up at the Museum of Modern Art a few years ago.
Well, so does reality.
You know, doesn't?
And there was a microphone up set up in the atrium, and it signed said Scream. It was one of her things, and you know, in her sans serif font that she loves to use so much. There's the microphone and a small PA, and it said Scream. And I got the idea that, you know, this has been sitting in someone's drawer since like 1969, and they didn't have anything to put up in the atrium that week, so they just said, hey, we got that Yoko thing. And but it worked. You know, people did come up to it and scream. You know, mostly they were tourists. I think the New Yorkers sort of walked right by it. Oddly, I'll say about Yoko, I saw her perform in Central Park. I mean, it was 5 years ago. She had a great band. She had some of the Chibo Mata players and there, and some, you know, downtown people. I think Thurston Moore was in the band. It was great. It was a really good concert. Absolutely ear-shattering caterwauling, you know, along with some pretty hard rock and some more sensitive poetry. She was received so well. People really embraced her. People really loved her. I think we've gone past the, oh, that's that awful woman that broke up the Beatles. And especially as a New Yorker, she's the Widow Lennon. And people really embraced her, but on her terms. Not on Beatles' terms. On Yoko terms. And that was really surprising.
Except for you, I think most men on Earth get frightened and hostile about her.
And Eric Danville, he loves her too. I know one other person and one other guy.
Yeah, well, he's going around the bend too, though, so let's discount him. No, I like Yoko because I do like the confrontation. I like some of her music. I think the first Plastic Ono band record that she made when she made the twin records with John, which is a great record. It reminds me of the Stooges. It's just a very powerful, driving record. I really like it a lot. I like on the live piece in Toronto, the Don't Worry, Kyoko, Mommy's Only Looking for a Hand in the Snow. It sounds like Captain Beefheart to me. It's great. She managed to pull this great riff out of those old white rock guys. But you were the one, too, who said, because I said, you know, she's like crashing the stage on the Mike Douglas show with Chuck Berry and John Lennon to the point where they had to turn her mic off. And I said, like, oh, man, she shouldn't have been there. And you were the one who said, no, it's their fucking fault for letting her be there because they're too fucking whipped and couldn't say no.
Mike was my editor.
There you go. There's the full disclosure.
We argued the whole time about it. We would have phone arguments the whole time.
It really bothered me that she got stuck with this, you know, after having a long career and so many different things, that she's the person who broke up the Beatles. Like, first of all, if she had...
Well, first of all,
congratulations.
Anybody who breaks up the Beatles can't be all bad.
No, but I don't think she did, but...
She's not... I mean, seriously. I mean, that's what part of your point, too. Like, one woman was going to break up the Beatles as if that were even possible?
And this might make everybody hate me, but I really don't care. I think I care a lot more about her as an artist than the Beatles. And
oh,
I,
definitely.
You know, it could be
you're
because
on friendly ground here.
Well, you and me, it's us against...
Mike and Judy ratings are just like, oh, boom, just dropping like a stone with a... You know, it's like you make fun of the Beatles. It's like, you know, they're these sacred cows.
It's like ripping up a picture of the Pope on Saturday Night Live.
Oh, man. The only thing that's worse is if you make fun of Patti Smith, who's like the real sacred cow. Then people get really, I find people really, what? You can't make fun of Patti.
But you know what? You know what it is? It's like men make fun of women when they haven't experienced their art. You have dragged Patti Smith's book through the shit without having read it.
No, I've not. Well,
yes,
look,
you have.
My problem.
Have you read it?
No, I have not read it.
And have you said mean things about it?
No, because I'm not nothing specific. I'm suspect, though. I'll be honest. I don't think Patty has a sense of humor. And that's what, and she takes herself seriously. I was a huge Patty fan at a time when I was probably the only guy in my high school who dug Patty Smith because, you know, these other squares thought she was like, you know, ugly or weird. She didn't shave her armpits and she was too punk and she wasn't Pat Benatar. I loved Patty Smith. I mean, I was all over Easter when it came out. And Horses was a great record, of course, before that. But Easter was the one that, you know.
Women just get judged by a whole different standard than men do.
Yeah, but I'm not like the others, McGuire.
Yes,
you can
are.
Trust me. But tell me, Patti Smith has a sense of humor. That's what bothers me about Patti.
She does have a sense of humor.
What? Name one fucking funny thing she's ever fucking said.
I actually
Googled Patti Smith's sense of humor. Okay, the other day. Okay, and all I can come up with was William Burroughs and her in a conversation, and she was complaining to him. No one thinks I'm funny.
I saw her speak in New York Public Library last year. She was really funny and sweet.
What did she name one fucking thing?
I don't know any of... She didn't have any knock-knock jokes, and it was over a year ago, so I can't think of it, but she was very self-deprecating, sweet, and funny.
Well, everybody should have a knock-knock joke.
Really? Knock-knock.
Who's there?
Wait, no, you tell the knock-knock.
Okay. A horse goes into a bar, and...
Hey, buddy.
And the barman says, why the long face?
But that's not a knock-knock joke.
And then the horse says, my wife just died.
Oh.
I like that one.
That's good. That's Lisa Carver. That's next level shit. Next level shit with Lisa Carver.
So after this performance in New York, are you going to come down here for readings with the Yoko book, I hope?
Yeah, I don't do readings. I don't do readings.
Oh, I see. Fancy.
But I will come down and maybe do some of her pieces.
Does Yoko.
Yeah.
Oh, that'll be fun.
You know how she did the cut piece? Like, that's her most famous piece.
I don't...
Oh, well, she invited everyone to come up and cut a piece of her clothes off until she was naked. Well, not until she... Whenever, whatever.
Obviously made a big impact on Gigi Allen.
Yeah. So I think I could redo that, except I'll make an audience member get their clothes cut off.
So it's sort of like a Yoko Ono cover band, except you're doing her performance.
Yes! Yes, exactly! She's good for covers.
That'll be great. So you have two kids, and didn't you just release a book by your son?
Yeah.
My friend Zach bought it. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
It's called Wolf the Artist from Apocalypse Back, and it's all he's very apocalyptic. He's evangelical, and all he cares about is, you know, the kingdom of heaven. So it's all about, you know, when the zombies come and they destroy everybody and eat their brains, and there's a solar flare, and there's ice caps, and then all the evangelicals go to heaven and hang out with Jesus with their renewed bodies.
What does he think about Mom possibly being a left behind?
He says that I get to believe what I want to believe.
Okay, so he's not a pushy evangelist.
No. He's, you know, I let him be an evangelist, and he lets me be, you know, whatever I am.
And your daughter Sadie seems pretty sassy herself.
She is. She's an atheist.
Okay. How have you avoided being the star of a reality show?
How has she avoided
you?
That? Oh, me.
Yeah. You know, La Familia Carver.
Yeah, Sadie's a cheerleader and a gymnast and
an atheist.
Yes, and she beats up boys for exercise.
That's good exercise.
Yeah.
So what do your kids think of your performances? Have you ever...
Oh, God, no, they know nothing. my daughter tried to Google me one time, and I stopped her, and I said, you know, it's not appropriate for you. So she put big chalk signs everywhere around our house. Don't Google Lisa Carver. It's inappropriate.
So she's an artist, too, really.
Yeah, she's a...
I guess that's a good piece, the Don't Google Lisa Carver piece. Yeah. And you also have had more recently had a book of paintings and a very, very personal book, the Untitled book.
Yes.
Which I loved it. I mean, the artwork is beautiful. It's very, very moving.
It was
very
such
personal.
A good marketing move of mine to give it no title.
Hey, it worked for Led Zeppelin.
Yeah, and the Beatles. So, you know, bring it all back home.
You are kind of like...
But that was when you were... Aside from the very rich text and the very incredible story, you were doing a painting a day for 80 days?
100.
100 paintings,
yes.
In 100 days.
Yeah.
And one of which is in my living room, by the way.
I know.
I look at it every day. But that's incredible. I mean, and you were selling them on eBay, and I think you sold them all, right?
I sold all 100. And then, I was never a painter before.
Which is insane, because your work is amazing.
And now I'm so exhausted, I'm never going to paint again.
Well, that's just why you're making people come to New York to make other people paint for
you.
Yes,
exactly. My next one's going to be, I'm going to do sculptures. I'm going to do 100 sculptures in 100 days. And since the last one was so depressing, it was about child prostitution,
I don't know. Oh, that sounds kind of...
Yeah.
Well, you know, Lisa, if I were a sculptor. But then again...
I want to go with the if I was a sculpture.
If I were
like
a sculpture,
that.
You know, I would be like one of the, I'd be more like a fountain, you know, like with like water spurting out of my mouth, like in a Don Martin drawing.
Out of your mouth, right?
Yeah.
But I'm going to do 100 happy sculptures. And the first one...
Are they going to be happy?
Yeah. And I've never done it before. So I just went out and I bought all this clay and I'm going to roll it out. So the first one is going to be a chunky bar. I'm going to do a sculpture of a chunky bar because that makes me happy.
A chunky bar is the one like a trapezoidal thing.
No, it's a square, okay. And it has raisins and nuts in it, but it's just, I don't know what's so wonderful about it, except I can't find it anywhere, and so whenever I do, it's so exciting. And
all right.
Have you ever had Chunkies?
Of course.
What's wrong with you?
Well, I don't know if they make them
I've had
anymore,
I'm just
though.
Trying to remember, but it's not exactly a square, though,
it is,
right?
It's exactly
it's
a square.
It's raised area.
It's like, isn't it like the trapezoidal, kind of like a platforming?
Well, you break it into pieces. But they're bites, really. I eat the whole thing. It's huge. I just
so if a date wants to impress you, show up with a chunky bar.
It's like the Holy Grail. It's hard to find these days.
All right. In search of chunky bars.
I think we're out of time, Mike.
I can't believe it. Once again, it's been the fastest half hour on the internet. This is the best. Lisa, thank you so
thank you,
much
Lisa.
For coming to visit us today.
Thank you for inviting me. I love you guys. I love your show. It's the best. I'll never listen to anything else again, ever.
You have it on tape, right, Jack?
After I listen to this, anything else would just be a sucky suck fest.
Of course, you're on Facebook, and do you have a website and any other outreach?
Suckdog.net.
Suckdog.net. Go there.
No,
wow.
Not neck. I like that, though.
Man, it's been a hell of a day. All right, it's Mike and G. We'll see you guys next week.
Listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us questions at any time at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a nonprofit organization. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.
Everybody, I'm Nick Latham.
And I'm Leah Bonema.
And we're the hosts of Were You Raised by Wolves?
Each week, we try to make the world a kinder, nicer place.
Well, that's the idea, at least.
I mean, we try.
Have you ever wondered what to do if you're ghosted?
Or what to do when a friend asks you to borrow money?
Or the proper way to eat Cheetos?
You know, the big questions.
So please find Were You Raised by Wolves wherever you listen.